Let me just say a few things about the main preoccupation that I'm going to have this week, and that relates to our continued effort to mark up this health care reform legislation in the Health and Education Committee. We're going to begin with that markup of the coverage portions of that bill on Wednesday morning, and those are the most consequential and controversial provisions in the bill, and I think we've come up with a fairly good proposal that has the support of Democrats on the committee, and I hope will be given serious consideration by the Republicans as well. So that's where we are. It would expand coverage substantially. It would help keep the cost of health care coverage down in coming years, and it would bring into our healthcare reform, into our healthcare system, a lot of reforms that have been long overdue. So I think it's a good thing to be doing. Let me just go ahead with questions on that or anything else that's on your mind. Elaine, are you there?
I am, Senator. This one is a little bit of a long one with a follow-up also. Okay. The New York Times reports that the climate change legislation that came out of the House a couple of weeks ago, including the cap-and-trade bill, only has the support of about 45 Democrats and zero Republicans in the Senate. First of all, do you support the cap-and-trade measure as it passed the House? And second, what do you understand is the major obstacle to getting the votes needed to pass this legislation?
Well, I would not want to support the bill that just came out of the House. I think there are obviously some problems with it. I think the general thrust of it, the idea of putting a limit on greenhouse gas emissions, I do support. And I introduced a bill 2 years ago here in the Senate that would have capped greenhouse gas emissions and imposed a cap and trade system going forward. But it was a much simpler and I think more appropriate and effective way to do it than what the House came up with. So we're going to try, we've already reported out of our Energy and Natural Resources Committee a proposed a package of legislation dealing with energy issues directly. We're also going to have developed here in the Senate a cap and trade proposal that would be combined with that. I believe that's the majority leader's opinion or intention. He would combine those two together and bring those to the floor sometime this fall.
And would that combined legislation, would that be the piece that would finally go through the Senate Finance Committee on which you sit?
Well, I think that the two the two parts of the bill are the energy-related provisions that already came out of our Energy and Natural Resources Committee, and then the cap and trade proposal, which would likely come out of our Environment Committee. And then we would go to the floor, and there would be added to that provisions that came out of the Finance Committee. So it would be a combination of proposals out of many committees.
Do you think you'll need a filibuster-proof 60 votes to get this legislation passed? And if so, what are you going to have to do both in the Senate Finance Committee and in the full Senate to get that number of votes?
Well, I do think we'll have to be able to get 60 senators to support any climate change legislation that we're able to pass through the Senate. I hope we can find the necessary votes to pass that legislation through compromise and change. That's the way you put votes together here in the Senate, and I hope we can succeed with this.
Just one last follow-up on this, Senator. Thanks for your time. Some opponents of the proposed cap-and-trade system call it a cap-and-tax system, asserting that it's just another way for the government to tax corporations and in turn the public. What's your response to statements like that?
Well, I think clearly, you know, one of the favorite ways to oppose legislation in the Congress is to try to somehow label it a tax. Some of the proposals that we're considering here in the Senate would ensure that any funds generated from this kind of a regime would be returned to taxpayers so as to reduce any increased cost of energy that they might incur. I think that I think it's inaccurate to label this a tax bill. And clearly, though, that's going to continue to be part of the rhetoric.
Thanks very much, Doug.
Bill Dupuy, go right ahead.
Okay, thanks. On the health care reform bill, can you detail some of the specifics about the coverage aspect that the health committee is going to be looking at and talking about?
Well, yes. We are going to have a proposal before us this week that, according to the Congressional Budget Office, would result in a substantial increase in the number of people covered. It would involve a series of reforms in the insurance markets, and that is insurance policies that would be offered in the future, healthcare insurance policies. Would have what we call guarantee issue. That is, they'd have to be available to anyone who wanted to purchase them. They'd have guaranteed renewal. The company could not refuse to renew the policy because it turned out you got sick. They would have prohibitions in them against any pre-existing exclusion, or to say that more simply, I guess there would be a requirement that they not preclude people from getting the coverage because of pre-existing conditions. There would be a requirement that they not have annual limits on the amount that you could receive or lifetime limits. And so those are all insurance market reforms. In addition, there would be an individual mandate. That is, everyone would be required to get coverage. Either through a public program, one of the various public programs available, or through private insurance. And there would be an employer mandate for employers with 26 or more employees. They would either have to provide coverage or they would have to pay a penalty for the employees beginning with the 26th employee. They would have to pay a penalty of $750 a year.
Is there still a public option and a private insurance plan option in this discussion?
Yeah, what we would do is of course, we start by grandfathering in all existing plans. Anyone who's got health insurance coverage that they want to keep is able to do that, able to renew that, able to add family members to that, whatever they choose to do. So there's a genuine grandfathering provision. Then there is the ability of the private companies to offer insurance that meets these requirements, and they can offer that either through these newly established so-called gateways, that we would have a gateway in each state that would be a place that a person or a business could go to obtain coverage, or they could buy it separate from that. But that would be available. And then there would be a so-called public option or community health option, which would be available that the Secretary of Health and Human Services would set up that would have to compete with private health care plans, would have to charge enough in premiums to pay for the cost of the health care provided, would not be subsidized by the government once established. And that would be another choice that people would have.
Sounds like a massive administration problem, is it? Putting all of this together and then making sure it works?
Well, there's no question that it'll take a couple of years to get this in place. And the way we're contemplating it, this would essentially begin to operate in 2012. And I think that kind of lead-up time is required. But I don't think this requires a substantial additional bureaucracy, and I think it will go a long way toward ensuring quality health care for a great many more Americans.
Okay, thanks.
Peter, did Peter come in or not?
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay. Peter, go ahead.
Good morning.
Morning.
We had a nice 4th of July. Can you give us I have two questions. The first one, will you give us a preview on your meeting with Secretary Salazar to talk about the Bureau of Land Management and Water Resources? I guess it's called America's Outdoor Heritage.
Oh, meeting. Right. Yeah. No, I am attending a press event this afternoon with Secretary Salazar. This is a occasion to receive a report. There's an outdoor resources group that has been working here for the last 6 or 8 months to develop a set of proposals for the Secretary of Interior and for the Congress on ways to improve opportunities for Americans to enjoy the outdoors. This is a follow-up to earlier efforts that have been made along these same lines. Secretary Salazar will be there. Senator Alexander, Lamar Alexander from Tennessee, and I co-chaired this effort. And we are presenting the results of this set of recommendations to Secretary Salazar this afternoon.
Well, what are the recommendations going to be and include? Are people not already enjoying the outdoor?
I think they're going to be in the nature of how do we better fund the Land and Water Conservation Fund? How do we, this was established some 40 years ago. The Land and Water Conservation Fund was established. Unfortunately, it has not been funded on a regular basis since then. Trying to figure out if there are ways that we could ensure that in the coming decades it is funded properly and that those funds are available for protection of public lands that need to be protected. Those are the nature of the recommendations. I haven't seen the full list, quite frankly. The group that's been developing them are just presenting them to us this afternoon.
Okay. And also this afternoon, President Barack Obama is in Russia talking with them about nuclear arms and disarmament and the expiration of the treaty coming up. Were you briefed on that, or what are your expectations for his trip to Russia?
Well, I think there was a need to go ahead and conclude an agreement as a follow-on to the START nuclear arms reduction treaty that President Bush entered into. That had to be done this year, and I think that's a major thrust of this trip or a major purpose of this trip. I haven't been briefed on the details of what they're announcing today or during the trip, but I think something along the lines that they're announcing had to be done.
And do you expect that any new treaties would impact the national labs in New Mexico?
Well, I don't think there'll be a direct impact. I think our national labs in New Mexico are heavily involved in assisting the Department of Defense and the Department of Energy in all nuclear non-proliferation efforts, in all of the efforts to dismantle our nuclear warheads, both here and in the former Soviet Union or Russia. So I think they'll have a lot to do related to nuclear weapons, even as a result of this treaty.
What would happen if something new didn't get done before the treaty expires? And why do you think the White House waited so long to get involved? The expiration's right around the corner.
Well, frankly, this is something should have been done by the Bush administration before they left office, but they did not take action on it. And I think that President Obama is acting appropriately to put in place some follow-on to this START treaty before it expires.
Thank you, sir.
Uh-huh. Crystal King, are you there? You were just monitoring. Okay, that's great. Elaine, did you have another question?
I do, Senator. Thanks very much. Over the 4th of July weekend, there were once again protests calling themselves tea parties in New Mexico, most notably in Albuquerque. One of the central messages of these events is that participants believe spending is out of control by Congress and the Obama administration. What is your response to statements like that? And how does spending now compare to what it was 2 or 10 years ago in your estimation?
Well, I think we all share a concern about too much spending. At the same time, though, I think all the economists, whether they're conservative or liberal, are advising those of us in government that government stimulus of the economy is an important factor to pursue at this point. The worst policy we could follow would be to cut back on government spending at the same time that the private sector is cutting back on their spending. So as businesses are laying people off, as they continue to, and reducing their budgets for the government to follow their lead would throw us into a deeper and longer recession than we are already in. So I think most people think there needs to be a short-term strategy and then a long-term strategy. The short-term, over the next year or 18 months, I hope, is that we can stimulate the economy, and part of the way to do that is through expenditures by the government. Following that, once the economy's growing again and we're creating jobs again, then a top priority needs to be getting back to a balanced budget, which we were at in 2000, and which I hope we can get back to.
How do you compare the spending of the Obama administration at this time with the stimulus packages, et cetera, to spending maybe 2 or 10 years ago?
Well, I think that because of the stimulus package, the spending is at a higher level, and clearly the size of the deficit is at a higher level. But as I say, once the stimulus effort is behind us, and once the economy is growing again, it's my hope that we can bring spending into line with government revenues and get back to a balanced budget situation. That will take a few years, unfortunately, but it's an important long-term goal. So to that extent, I agree with folks that are saying that.
Thank you very much, Senator.
Bill, are you still there?
I am. One final question. Al Franken, have you met him yet?
Well, I've met Al Franken several times before. In fact, I went to an event for him a couple of weeks ago here in Washington and got a chance to visit with him then. I think he's going to be a great addition to the Senate, and we're going to swear him in tomorrow, as I understand it, and he's going to be going on the Health and Education Committee that I serve on, and I presume that he will be involved in our efforts to mark up the remainder of this health care bill starting Wednesday of this week.
Okay, many thanks.
Thank you very much. Peter, did you have another question?
No, I think you've covered it all for us.
Okay, thank you very much. Good talking to everybody.